WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
CBS News Brief. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill have released a sexually suggestive birthday letter to Jeffrey Epstein that they claim was written and signed by President Trump. He calls it a fake. CBS's Scott McFarland.
In late August, the House Oversight Committee subpoenaed some of these records to include the birthday book shared with Jeffrey Epstein. Those subpoenas were provided to the committee, according to Democrats.
Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass is speaking out after the Supreme Court gave the Trump administration the green light to step up ICE raids in L.A.
This isn't just an attack on the people of Los Angeles. This is an attack on every person in this city and in every city in our country.
Dr. Jean Marazzo, a top scientist at the NIH, ousted after clashing with officials over Health Secretary Kennedy's vaccine policy, has filed a whistleblower complaint.
Ultimately, we were disregarded. We became inconvenient.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If you're looking for a documentary that will make your life look pretty boring, check out AKA Charlie Sheen, a new doc that drops on Netflix this week. The Inside Look is a two-parter that explores his three marriages, movie career where his credits include Platoon, Wall Street, and Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and the hit sitcom Two and a Half Men. The 60-year-old Sheen also talks about his various addictions, mental health breakdown in 2011, where he claims to have had tiger blood, and his firing from Two and a Half Men for drug use. And Sheen is well aware that anytime you self-promote with a new movie or book, you do need spicy new material. So the actor is now saying he has also had sex with lots of men, and it all started when he was smoking crack. I tip my hat to the producers who somehow managed to cram all that into just two parts. AKA Charlie Sheen drops September 10th on Netflix. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Brewer baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Game two of the Brewers and Rangers tonight in Texas. Milwaukee losing last night 5-0, but one bright spot was the return of Christian Yelich to the lineup. Yelich had missed the past five games with a bad back. Pat Murphy after the game.
Yeah, he's on it. It was a great day for him. Came up kind of empty, got one hit, but he hit two other balls that, you know, they're homers in some parks.
NFL, the Packers host the Commanders on Thursday Night Football. I asked Micah Parsons how he was holding up after just a week to get ready for the Lions game.
Physically, obviously draining. That was like my first game of just constant snaps, repetition, things like that. So obviously I got to, you know, recover, do everything I need to do to get ready for Thursday. But emotionally, I couldn't be more happy, you know, to get my first win in Lambeau, having amazing fans. You know, I told J-Lo that's our first one, and I can't wait to keep stacking them.
That's Packers defensive end Micah Parsons with Sports on. I'm Mike Clemens.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Tuesday, Dan Schaefer tells us about the latest political headlines from Madison, while Cam Stevenson from Courier Newsroom has the update from D.C.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Some stellar September weather to continue today with mostly sunny skies with highs in the low to mid 70s. For tonight, mostly cloudy, lows in the upper 50s. Beautiful again on Wednesday, plenty of sunshine, high temperatures in the mid 70s. Right now, 53 degrees.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5:30, we talk with the indomitable Stacey Abrams about how to build the big tent for Democrats in 2026 to return this country to the hands of working people. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Well, the Badgers picked up another good win this weekend, although much like the markets tend to do, they may have had you a little scared for a while. Good morning, everyone. I'm Ben Jarbo, and this is the Midwest Farm Report. To go along with the win on Saturday, they also had great weather, although it was a little chilly, but we'll check in with ag meteorologist Stu Muck in a few minutes to see if those lower temps are here to stay or if it was just a false fall. Later in the hour, market advisor John Heinberg with Total Farm Marketing joins the show to give some valuable insight on what the grain markets are doing. Hunting season's right around the corner, and that may have some of you looking to buy land for new spots. Chad Garteski, a recreational land owner and broker, gives a look at how much you may need to spend to buy good Wisconsin hunting ground. Also in the state, livestock farmers may soon be paying more for various licenses and permits. Pam Yonke talks with Equity Livestock's president and CEO, Kurt Larson, on what these proposed fee increases from DATCAP may look like. Don't go anywhere, because coming up next, Kylie Allen has a conversation with Heather Quackenboss on the safety measures that you should be sure to take while canning your produce.
You can't do the same thing and expect different results. So here's some advice. Change the seed and you'll change the game. Zitavo soybean seed is the seed you've always wanted. It's been tested again and again, going through at least 12 quality control protocols, because 11 wasn't enough. All to ensure that you get consistent performance from every seed that can pay off with better soybean yield. Zitavo soybean seed is ready to raise the bar for soybeans. Are you? Learn more at xitavosoybeanseed.com. Always read and follow label directions.
For over 125 years, Purina has been driven to unlock the greatest potential of every animal. Middleton Farmers Cooperative announces the launch of Purina Animal Feeds and Supplements with an in-store celebration of Purina sales, giveaways, and important information for you to help your animals live a healthy life. Register to win exclusive signature chicken and brown rice dog food at Middleton Farmers Co-op. Plus, with Purina purchase, you receive a $1 off taco voucher for the convenience store next door.
We want MaxFair! We want MaxFair!
There's a full house in the stands tonight, and it sounds like they're demanding higher milk fat and lower feed costs.
These fans know that growing Pioneer brand Plenish high oleic soybeans for dairy rations can help producers increase milk fat production without increasing feed costs.
For dairy farmers, it's Plenish soybeans for the winning return on investment.
Plant the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/feedplenish.
It's a form of food preservation that was developed by a contest held by Napoleon. Heather Quackenboss is the Extension Human Development and Relationship Educator. She gives us a few tips and tricks that we need to know to ensure that our canned food is both delicious and safe.
Canning is a beautiful form of food preservation that helps us try to save our garden vegetables, our fruits, so we can eat them in the middle of winter. Weirdly, canning was developed by a contest in France. Napoleon put it on when he was like, we need some different forms of food preservation. So canning is actually one of the newest forms of food preservation that we've seen in history.
Canning can be done. I've seen it lots of different ways. What's the best method?
So it's going to depend on what you're canning. Hot water bath is really good for fruits, for high acid foods, peaches, jams. You can do pickles because that vinegar is that acid in there. Anything that's a basic food, you are going to want a pressure canner. Now, some folks are like, oh, I can just use my pressure cooker, or oh, my Instant Pot, and we can't do that. We need that canner rather than cooker if we're going to do something with pressure.
And what's different between maybe a pressure cooker and a pressure canner?
Pressure canner is actually built to have all of those jars in there. It's built to withstand more heat, more pressure, and that way we can do things like canning our meat or canning or beans or things like that. A pressure cooker is just going to cook the food. So it's going to take your whole chicken and make your chicken really a whole lot faster when you get home than putting it in the oven would.
And if I'm using a pressure canner, is there any safety concerns I need to be concerned about?
You know, we are all very terrified of the pressure canner. It hisses, it rattles, it makes noise. I always thought it was going to go through the roof when I was a kid. And pressure canners have a lot of safety features on them now. Pre-1970s, there were stories of pressure canners that went through your ceiling. But now they have a lot of vents that if it does get a little too high pressure, they do vent out. What we just need to make sure we do is follow the directions for that pressure canner. And if you have a chance to can with a friend or a person who's done it before, that second time canning will be a whole lot more comfortable.
And let's say maybe I'm trying to preserve something that is a more basic food. I don't have maybe a pressure canner. Is there any other way that I can still safely preserve it?
Unfortunately, no. I did have a call once. A woman really, really wanted to pressure can or to hot water bath her carrots. And it's not safe. I mean, food safety, science-wise, it's just not safe. Those carrots are not going to get hot enough to kill all of the bacteria that are in them. So for basic foods, a pressure canner is the only safe way if you want to can it. Now, if you want to freeze it, that can work for you. You can blanch those carrots or beans or peas or whatever you have, blanch them, put them in freezer bags, and they'll last in your freezer just as long as canning would.
If I'm going out into my garden and I'm picking maybe these carrots or beans or anything that I plan on canning, is there any specific prep that needs to be done to those vegetables, or can I just take them straight from the garden?
Wouldn't that be nice? I would love to take them straight from the garden. What you get to do is you get to decide how you want that in your jars. For beans, as a kid, I had to French style cut so many green beans that I refuse to do it now. So I just cut those beans. You want to wash everything. You want to make sure that anything icky is taken off. If there's brown spots or a hole or a worm was munching on your green bean or your carrot for a while, you cut those things off, you wash everything. And then for some things, you can raw pack it right in your jars. So I can snip those green beans after they're washed, pack them right in the jars, put my salt, my boiling water in there and can them. For other things, you might want to blanch them a little bit, tomatoes to get those skins off, because honestly, skins in canned tomatoes are just icky. It's going to taste like something's wrong in there, and your guests, whoever eats it, is going to feel like they're chewing on a straw wrapper. So there's different things you have to do with each of the vegetables. It's actually a lot easier when you get started. Once you have everything right there and you start going, it goes pretty quickly.
When I cook, I like to just kind of start dumping things into a bowl. Is that something that I'm allowed to do if I want to can something safely, or should I maybe stick to a recipe?
So the safest thing we can do is stick to recipes that the food scientists have researched and looked at. And you can always look at the National Home Food Preservation website, which puts new recipes on there or has scientifically said, this is safe. But let's say we're making salsa. And I know with salsa, tomatoes are kind of acidic, right? So I could maybe just hot water bath my tomatoes. But in salsa, I might like adding onions and garlic and maybe cilantro, all things that are a little more basic. So what I'm going to want to do then, if there's not a recipe that is exactly what I have, I'm going to want to look at what's the most basic ingredient that I put in here and can it according to the time for that ingredient.
I'm no chemist, so can you kind of explain to me the difference between a basic or acidic food?
So when we look at acidic and basic, pure water is 7.0, so that's kind of neutral, right in the middle there. Anything acidic is going to be on the lower level of the pH scale, so things like peaches and berries and tomatoes. Sometimes if you just think of what makes your mouth pucker, that's probably fairly acidic. Basic food is going to be higher numbers on the pH scale, so it doesn't have acid in it, and that's probably not going to make our mouth pucker at all. So most vegetables are on that scale, our basic meats, different things like that. So if it's if it doesn't make your mouth pucker, it's probably not as acidic if you're going with a simple explanation.
And let's say, so we've talked a lot about our vegetables maybe that we're pulling out of our gardens. Does anything change if we're looking at maybe some of the fruit that we have growing out at our places?
You know, with fruit, it's what we actually do. We did have a call just a couple of weeks ago about a woman who used different pectin. She was using freezer pectin, but canned with it. And freezer pectin is made for you just mix the pectin with the fruit. You put it in whatever container you want and you stick it in the freezer. It'll make a nice gel. When you cook with it, it makes a little different consistency. So when we're doing fruit, we might hot pack it. We might cold pack it. We might make jam or jelly. When we're making jelly, we kind of have to really pay attention to what our pectin is. So that's your things like the Sure Gel you see in the boxes. There's some other different brands of pectin. Some fruits have a lot of pectin in them, like cranberries are just going to gel up on their own.
Are there any more interesting canning ideas or stories that people have that they come to you and say, hey, I really want to make this kind of jam or something?
We do. So I work a lot with the Ho-Chunk Nation, and we look at what are the food that your ancestors ate. And so we worked on a cedar jelly recipe and a dandelion jelly recipe. We might hear of dandelion wine, but we made jelly with it. And it actually was really delicious and tastes a little bit like a light honey. So we've done that. We've worked with an agency named Black in La Crosse. And in Africa, a lot of the food preservation was fermentation. So we worked a lot on fermentation, and there's of the youth program, there is only one youth whose fermentation jar exploded because they forgot to burp it. So we have a lot of different stories of trials and tribulations and successes and epic failures.
Heather Quackenboss, along with us, the Extension Human Development and Relationships Educator. She reminds us that if you have questions while canning, give your local Extension office a call or look online at the National Home Food Preservation website. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Kylie Allen.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Utah voters are back on a path to fair maps as a state circuit court judge ruled congressional districts must be redrawn by September 25th. The state Supreme Court ruled last summer that the legislature's attempt at circumventing a citizen-led independent redistricting commission by passing contrary state statutes was unconstitutional. In 2018, Utah voters approved Better Boundaries Proposition 4, establishing a commission independent from the legislature charged with creating fair, communities of interest-driven maps for Congress, state legislature, and school districts. Ignoring the voters, the GOP-dominated legislature passed laws to make the commission advisory instead of independent and gerrymandered the maps anyway. When the state Supreme Court ruled the legislature couldn't overrule voters, lawmakers proposed Amendment D to give it that authority. Its language was later ruled deceptive. August 25th, 3rd District Court Judge Diana Gibson ordered the legislature to create congressional districts by September 25th, using the fair maps criteria as approved by the voters to be reviewed by the court November 10th. The Utah News-Dispatch reports that Utah's GOP leadership will begrudgingly comply with the court's order. The maps will be in place for the 2026 midterms. We have the judge's order and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal. We're on Blue Sky at Democracy Minute.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
President of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten.
People have to show up. People have to exercise their voice. You can't just exercise your voice a minute before an election. This has to be about what is good for Americans and for us, what is good for working people. Working people made America. Working people deserve to have policy that helps them, not hurts them.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
A handshake deal with a South Dakota senator to fund public radio. What could go wrong? Brian Wadsworth of Native Public Radio joins us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Wisconsin, and there's a better chance all of us start to push that way. Well, with the exception of the very far north, there is some rain right along that northern edge of Wisconsin this morning and up into the UP of Michigan. Showers, even some thunderstorms up in the UP, but not much rain has been reported in northern Wisconsin at this time. Now, a frontal boundary is going to drop south into Wisconsin, become a bit stationary, keeping some of that rain chance in the far north today. And then all of us getting a small rain chance in the nighttime. It may not account to much of anything in far southern Wisconsin. In the north, there could be some couple of tenths of an inch, maybe a quarter inch. I'm looking up toward Eau Claire, Park Falls, Hayward, far northern Wisconsin. Areas further south, Oshkosh, Fond du Lac, Madison, not going to see a whole lot. Milwaukee may get some sprinkles out of it, but there will be some rain chance with that front dropping in tonight. And otherwise, the real focus here this week is the temperature slowly and surely start to warm up, heading back toward normal or even above. I'd say in Madison and Milwaukee, temperatures up in the 80s by Thursday and Friday. That's above normal at this time of the year. Our normal highs have really dropped into the mid-70s now, even low 70s in the far north. But when we start talking about upper 70s, even 80s, that's above normal as we head toward the mid part of September. That's an air mass we're going to have here as we make our way toward the weekend. But with that moderation, there's going to be a little rain chance, some instability created, and even late Friday or into Saturday, some small rain chances may begin to pop up. Maybe not the greatest of weekends for all of the outdoor plans, as every now and again there may be a little shower chance, but that much more mild air is going to be here. That probably makes a big difference for everybody. We'll tolerate maybe a little rain at a time to have some of that more mild, very comfortable late summer air that's going to settle in and stay here. In fact, those temps stay on the above normal side right on into the early part of next week. I'll have forecast details after this.
For far too long, seed discount offers have been too complicated. But today, the Seed Pros of Channel make our stand. No more confusion. No more long-winded radio ads. Just simple savings. 0% financing with early pay discounts. Today, we show up with an easier way to save on seed. Talk to your Channel Seed Pro to get all the details and see what you could be saving. Channel. All in. All season.
This is the sound of corn pests wreaking havoc on your crops. This is the sound of a channel field protected by Bayer's trait technology. With the RNAi technology of SmartStax Pro, the all-in corn rootworm fighter, and VT4 Pro, Bayer's wider spectrum of defense, you can stay one step ahead of ever-changing pest pressure. Find the right corn trait for your fields at channel.com/corntraits. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
For far too long, seed discount offers have been too complicated. But today, the Seed Pros of Channel make our stand. No more confusion. No more long-winded radio ads. Just simple savings. 0% financing with early pay discounts. Today, we show up with an easier way to save on seed. Talk to your Channel Seed Pro to get all the details and see what you could be saving. Channel. All in. All season.
Stu Muck along with us, giving us the weather update. Stu, in the last minute here, what else can you tell me that's coming for this week?
Well, a chance of showers in the north today, partly sunny skies further south. Northern Wisconsin holding in the 60s, low 70s in southern Wisconsin, I'd expect. All of us have that small rain chance overnight with more clouds. We drop back into the mid and even low 50s. But then tomorrow, some sunshine returning. I expect to be near 70 in the north, but been upper 70s in the south. Upper 70s, almost 80 in the south on Thursday with sunshine and some pretty light winds here through mid and late part of the week. Sounds very mild, like a nice late summer pattern that's going to settle in. I bet, Ben, you'll find a way to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, this weather's kind of making it difficult to figure out what exactly to wear on a given day.
Well, that lets you leave that sweatshirt somewhere to find tomorrow.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Stu Muck joining us. Thank you, Stu. And make sure you stick around. Coming up next, we will talk more about the new regulations and prices coming out from DACA.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to an interview with Clean Wisconsin's Amy Berrio. She discusses how the Wisconsin Supreme Court's ruling on a legislative committee's power could affect drinking water in rural communities.
So PFAS are a group of chemicals that are used on everyday products like nonstick cookware. They have tons of uses. They are found everywhere. And some of these are extremely toxic. They've been found to be toxic at very low levels in the parts per trillion. So there are starting to be drinking water standards and water standards for PFAS. PFAS are regulated under the Safe Drinking Water Act. So for municipalities, they are following the current Safe Drinking Water Act standards. But if you live in a community like Peshtigo or Marinette or French Camp or some of these other ones in rural Wisconsin that have experienced extremely high levels of PFAS in their drinking water, they are getting their drinking water from private wells. Those are not governed by the Safe Drinking Water Act. In Wisconsin, groundwater standards, so basically they get their drinking water from the aquifer, it's considered groundwater. Those are the standards that will help folks who are dealing with huge amounts of PFAS contamination in their groundwater, in their drinking water wells. And we don't have groundwater standards for PFAS in Wisconsin. The DNR pursued a groundwater standard. Time ran out on that, and now they're planning to pursue it again. Again, you know, the DNR up until today is thinking, how are we going to get this groundwater standard around these handful of folks at JCRAR? Now that the Supreme Court has made that ruling, we are incredibly hopeful that there will be a standard that gets through finally the rulemaking process. It's still going to take a long time because, again, they have to start all over with this process. It's a meaningful standard, some that are actually at levels that will protect people. Now, with respect to PFAS as a topic, as something that we need to get a hold of in this state and in this country, it is incredibly complex because you have PFAS that are in biosolids that are spread on farm fields. You have PFAS in almost every piece of furniture around us, continually made in consumer products. And the reason why they have the nickname Forever Chemicals is because they don't break down in the environment. So that means they only have a few places to go: in our air, in our water, and in our soil. So these rules are incredibly important to start to at least take care of the urgent problem, like the people in Peshtigo and Marinette and other communities all across the state are facing. But taking care of the fire isn't the same as taking care of the problem. And we've got an enormous problem on our hands with PFAS. It's going to take far beyond any rulemaking to address, considering how pervasive these chemicals are and how harmful they can be.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
CBS News Brief. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill have released a sexually suggestive birthday letter to Jeffrey Epstein that they claim was written and signed by President Trump. He calls it a fake. CBS's Scott McFarland.
In late August, the House Oversight Committee subpoenaed some of these records to include the birthday book shared with Jeffrey Epstein. Those subpoenas were provided to the committee, according to Democrats.
Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass is speaking out after the Supreme Court gave the Trump administration the green light to step up ICE raids in L.A.
This isn't just an attack on the people of Los Angeles. This is an attack on every person in this city and in every city in our country.
Dr. Gene Marazzo, a top scientist at the NIH, ousted after clashing with officials over Health Secretary Kennedy's vaccine policy, has filed a whistleblower complaint.
Ultimately, we were disregarded. We became inconvenient.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Brewer baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Game two of the Brewers and Rangers tonight in Texas. Milwaukee losing last night 5-0, but one bright spot was the return of Christian Yelich to the lineup. Yelich had missed the past five games with a bad back. Pat Murphy after the game.
yeah, it was. He's on it. It was a great, great day for him. Came up kind of empty, got a one hit, but he hit two other balls that, you know, they're homers in some parks.
NFL, the Packers host the Commanders on Thursday Night Football. I asked Micah Parsons how he was holding up after just a week to get ready for the Lions game.
Physically, obviously draining. That was like my first game of just constant snaps, repetition, things like that. So obviously I got to, you know, recover, do everything I need to do to get ready for Thursday. But emotionally, I couldn't be more happy, you know, to get my first win in Lambeau, having amazing fans. You know, I told J-Lo that's our first one, and I can't wait to keep stacking them.
That's Packers defensive end Micah Parsons with Sports On. I'm Mike Clemens.
Pete Schwaba. On the next Nightlight, I welcome Green Bay's own Frank Hermans. Just a bit outside, director Sean Hannish joins with big news and the Green Bay Film Festival's Nick Watier. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Some stellar September weather to continue today with mostly sunny skies with highs in the low to mid 70s. For tonight, mostly cloudy, lows in the upper 50s. Beautiful again on Wednesday, plenty of sunshine, high temperatures in the mid 70s. Right now, 53 degrees.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Sugared soda or diet soda? What's worse, Mr. Jeff Perry?
Sugared sodas are worse.
Really?
I think that Coke Zero is better than regular Coke.
Kurt, listen on MDX of Madison.
Diet sodas are terrible because it fools the brain in producing insulin. If you don't care about your body, go for it.
Jeffrey says, I think it's pretty obvious that I don't.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent episode of the Maggie Dawn Show, where she talks with UW-Madison's Dr. Chuck Nicholson.
Let's talk about the labor market and sort of like the 1-2 punch that is affecting the agricultural industry, specifically farmers and dairy farmers here in Wisconsin. Not only do you have this chaos, this uncertainty, this much higher expense, much lower appetite from the people that we sell our dairy products to buy them because it is reciprocal tariffs, hence a trade war is what it's called. We have that punch, and we have this 1-2 punch coming from the Trump administration. Frankly, looking at worker shortages this summer, potentially. We're looking at these massive cuts to the Supplemental Nutritional and Food Assistance Program, or Emergency Food Assistance, SNAP, where farmers in Door County and in every county in Wisconsin where there are farmers would sell directly into places that were providing school lunches. Those programs are being gutted. Is this really kind of a perfect storm that Donald Trump has created for farmers?
So we have the possibility you mentioned of lower prices because we can't sell as much of our product outside of the U.S. We have the, and actually through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Programs, we actually sell a fair amount of dairy products through those kinds of food and nutrition programs, including the school lunch and school breakfast programs. And then we have the possibility of increased costs for equipment and some other inputs. And then we also have the possibility of both labor shortage and higher wage costs related to immigration policy. So if you kind of put that together, the package is not a sort of a rosy picture. In any situation that you can think of, we may have lower prices, we may have higher input costs. Those are things that have a direct impact on the margins for dairy farmers and other farmers in the state. And actually, we could say the same thing related to higher input costs and lower market prices for dairy processors, the folks who make cheese and put it in the packages and take it to the grocery store or take it to your local pizza restaurant. So the combination of these things is not working favorably. I guess one of the things that I kind of like to point out to people is the policies that we have in place are really more kind of collateral damage when we think about what's going on with agriculture. They're not designed to address problems in agriculture really specifically. They're not designed to help policies in agriculture. They're designed to affect kind of these bigger macro and global politics type power type issues. And so agriculture is not kind of in the driver's seat when it comes to thinking about how they're going to be affected by the various policies that are being discussed right now.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee, 540 WAUK.
Welcome back to the Midwest Farm Report, everybody. I'm Ben Jarbo, along with you this Tuesday morning. And it's going to be another beautiful day out there in the 70s. And that provides a great time to get out on the water and try some fishing. I know I went this last weekend here, and I did all right. I did all right out there. I would be looking on those drop-offs where I had success with bass and pike was drop-offs, where it goes from about 2 feet down to 10 feet. I was out there throwing a wacky rig, and I was throwing a natural-colored crankbait, square-bill crankbait, running that around 5-6 feet down, and the bass and pike were coming up and eating that. So I would be aiming in those areas. It doesn't hurt to throw around the weeds, especially if it's more on the open body out there instead of back in a channel. Back in channels, the water's a little cooler, so the fish may not quite be up there. They might still be hanging a little bit warmer water, because I know there was a few degree temperature change, and the fish were preferring that slightly warmer, closer to 70 degree rather than the 65 degree water. I also wouldn't be shy about throwing a chatterbait, a bladed jig, because those were getting some bites as well. I was out there with my uncle, and he was throwing that around getting some bite, but that was on also a natural colored bait. They were really just hammering the natural colors out there, so that's what I would stick with. I mean, you can try to look around and switch up a bit, try some other colors, try the fall red. Don't know if they're quite biting that yet. It might take another week or two before they start biting that, but these are just a lot of things to think about while you get out there, and good luck if you do have the day off and want to try some fishing. Something that's a little more unlucky is that DACAP has proposed fee increases for various things. So let's take a listen in to Kurt Larson, the president and CEO of Equity Livestock, while he has a chat with Pam Yonke about what this might entail.
There's actually two rules we're looking at. There's ATCP 10. And, you know, 10 governs a lot of registrations for deer farms and fish farms, but it also has the certificates of veterinary inspection, also known as health papers. So for animals crossing a state line or going to shows, that's going to affect those types of individuals. And then if anybody's a facility that where they get a brucellosis or tuberculosis free certification, those are in that part. And again, the health papers do affect what we do at Equity here. The other ones, not so much. So we are watching that chapter due to that. But chapter 12 is the chapter that really impacts what we're doing. And there's an annual registration or annual license fee that we pay for our markets to be licensed every year. And then dealers, so livestock dealers, as well as livestock truckers, also have to pay an annual registration fee. And primarily what that does is it funds the audits. So in our case, our livestock markets, our markets are all Class A markets because of the number of sales we have in a year. So as Class A markets, a DACAP auditor comes out to our facility quarterly and reviews our paperwork, make sure we're compliant, that we have all of our I's dotted and T's crossed. And then they also kind of review our processes and make sure that we're compliant on our animal handling and some of those things. And then they also, they'll audit the dealers as well. Dealers are not as frequent. They try to audit the dealers about once every 3 years, as opposed to quarterly with the Class A markets. and then truckers as well. And for the most part, they're just trying to make sure that that the truckers are licensed, that anybody hauling cattle for someone else is a licensed trucker. And then you have to license each vehicle unit that you use as a licensed trucker. So there's a separate fee for that, a separate sticker you have to have on the unit and those types of things. So, primarily that's what it is. You know, one of the issues we've had is that, DATCAP has not, had any, requirements of the dealers or the truckers. For example, at the federal level to be a registered dealer, registered livestock dealer with USDA, at the federal level, a dealer has to have a Packers and Stockyard bond, which is an awesome tool to provide some protection, to anybody selling cattle to a dealer. If they don't get paid or the check's not good, they have that bond they can go back on and try to recoup some of their money. But Wisconsin DATCAP has not done anything in the last few years to make sure that anybody they're issuing a dealer license to actually has a bond. And there's been a couple instances here in the last 12 to 9 months where a couple individuals have kind of left the industry and left several people holding the bag on cattle they hadn't paid for, but they took and disposed of, and where obviously a dealer bond would have been a great tool to recoup some of that loss. But that's not been part of DATCAP's protocol here in the last few years. So,
So this is not something that we should take for granted. These are important mechanisms in the cattle industry. And Wisconsin is not unique, correct? This kind of licensing happens in other states.
Correct. Yep. All of our neighboring states, Illinois, Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, they've all got a similar process with an annual license, you know, and we certainly can get a little more into that. Every state department of ag does a little bit different as far as how they categorize things and what their audit frequency is and what their fees are. But most of those states do subsidize the programs with shared funding from other programs. None of the neighboring states are a full user based program like DATCAP is proposing to move to.
All right. So the real issue that we want to get to, Kurt, is the proposed fee increases that we're looking at. Now, as I understand it, most of these fees have not been adjusted since about 2008, 2009, and the numbers get pretty big pretty fast.
Oh, yes, they certainly do. I think the one of the smaller percentage increases is going to be your livestock dealer license. Currently at $220, goes up 205% to $670. The livestock truckers currently at $60 for the license, proposed to go to $370. That's a 517% increase. And then they also have to have that registration or sticker for each vehicle. Those are currently at $20, and they're proposing raising those to $70, which is another 250% increase. In our case, the Class A livestock market, that market that has more than four sales a year, currently we're paying $420 a year, which incidentally is right in line with our neighboring states. But for our Class A livestock markets, they're proposing a 1,669% increase. That $420 is proposed to go to $7,430 a year.
Kurt Larson, the president and CEO of Equity Livestock, giving us an inside look on what the fee increases for ATCP Chapter 10 and Chapter 12 might look like. Coming up next, we're going to stick with the pricing trend and take a look at what recreational land values look like and the markets.
We want the cream of the crop. We want the cream of the crop. We want the cream of the crop.
There's a buzz on the field tonight. The dairy farming crowd is demanding Pioneer brand Plenish high oleic soybeans. These fans know that growing Plenish high oleic soybeans for dairy rations can help farmers reduce ration costs while increasing milk fat content.
The cream of the crop rises to the top.
Plant the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/feedplenish.
This is the sound of corn pests wreaking havoc on your crops. This is the sound of a channel field protected by Bayer's trait technology. With the RNAi technology of SmartStax Pro, the all-in corn rootworm fighter, and VT4 Pro, Bayer's widest spectrum of defense, you can stay one step ahead of ever-changing pest pressure. Find the right corn trait for your fields at channel.com/corn traits. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
We want Raptor! We want Raptor!
There's a full house in the stands tonight, and it sounds like they're demanding higher milk fat and lower feed costs.
Plenty, plenty, plenty.
These fans know that growing Pioneer brand Plenish high oleic soybeans for dairy rations can help producers increase milk fat production without increasing feed costs.
For dairy farmers, it's Plenish soybeans for the winning return on investment.
Plant the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/feedplenish.
Welcome back, everybody. Before we get to the markets, let's take a look at what recreational land prices are doing from owner and broker Chad Garteski.
If you're talking about Buffalo County, that has a little bit more of a draw in terms of the deer hunting side. There's a 40-acre wooded property can go for anywhere between $8,000 and $10,000 per acre. That's the extreme kind of high side. If you were to place more of an average on it for Western Wisconsin, I think you're probably looking somewhere in that $5,000 to $6,500 per acre range. But what's crazy is just 5 years ago, that was probably $3,500 an acre. Some cases we've seen it double, you know, in that period of time.
Wow. If you are looking forward to the hunting season, that's right around the corner. You might not want to buy your hunting ground right now. You might want to keep hunting on your buddy's land or your family's land for a few years here. Well, let's see what the markets are moving like this morning. The grains are moving lower to start the day, with cash and new crop corn down 1.5 at 420.25, and cash and new crop soybeans down 1.25 at 1032.5. December wheat contracts are down 1.25 at 522.5. Class 3 milk is showing some small rises, with October contracts up a penny at 1688 a hundredweight, and November contracts up 10 cents at 1695 a hundredweight. And yesterday, those 40-pound blocks of cheese closed up a half penny at 169.5, while butter closed up a quarter of a penny at 202.5. Coming up next, we talk with market advisor John Heinberg to see what's happening within the grain markets. Don't touch that dial.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond, 540 WAUK.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. A big win for water protections at the State Court of Appeals. The court tossed out a lawsuit that had been filed by lobbying groups on behalf of some very large dairies known as CAFOs. If successful, the suit would have undermined a critical state water protection program that helps keep untreated animal waste out of Wisconsin's waterways and drinking water. The legal fight over the Line 5 oil pipeline in northern Wisconsin is moving to Madison. A judge is set to hear from a series of experts who will testify about significant long-term risks of the plan to build a new 41-mile segment of the pipeline. Canadian oil giant Enbridge is pushing to clear trees, dig trenches, blast through bedrock, and fill wetlands in northern Wisconsin to make way for the new segment. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Did you miss Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers and theaters? Good news. It's on television on Tuesday night for free. Join us next time when we talk with the producer and director.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4. You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
Crop production in. And, you know, we want to talk a little bit about, you know, just how this crop is coming down the pipeline here. Obviously, we've got a forecast that's turning on the warmer and drier side. Now, in our area, it's been pretty decent. Some moisture's been coming through. We have kind of dried out a little bit recently here. But, you know, I was down through the southern part of the Corn Belt, Indiana, Illinois here a couple of weeks ago, and things are really dry. And this drier forecast is starting to show some drought issues popping up in the drought monitor maps. Now, obviously, what's that going to do? It's just going to speed this harvest to the finish line, or get the crop to the finish line, excuse me. And that's going to be something we need to watch here. USDA's got some very big projections for yields out there. The market right now is really anticipating that number coming down. Now, we'll see if that starts happening on Friday this week. That's when we get those numbers put together. Just got the corn yield numbers in front of me. Market's expecting that yield to come down from 188.8 to 186 for corn. Soybeans has come down about 0.4 of a bushel to 53.2. Now, I think most in the marketplace feel that number is even lower than this, but it's going to be a starting point. So now with that, though, just keep in mind that last year we had a much drier forecast across the entire Corn Belt, and actually USDA saw the yield move up a little bit from August to September. So, you know, don't be shocked. We see some just different numbers. The market will trade them, and then it'll settle down, and it'll trade what it feels truly is the best, is going to be the accurate number in its mind and where this crop could be, which is probably still going to be softer than even the numbers we're going to see on Thursday. We got a long way to go in this process with the USDA in terms of getting numbers where they need to. So again, don't react over too much to what we see, what comes on paper. It's just the process and the step we need to go. I think the market really would like to see some confirmation, though, that the crop is getting smaller for both corn and soybeans.
And I mean, those are still pretty good yield projections right now, but where can we find, or where's that demand going to be? Where are we going to try to be putting this corn and soybeans?
You know, the corn side is actually in pretty good shape on the demand front, especially on the export side. Now, one of the problems with the way the USDA has their numbers set up after that August report, they put a lot of extra demand in what we call the feed and residual category, about 250 million bushels over last year. So realistically, the USDA could bring this yield down 4 or 5 bushels per acre and make an adjustment on that feed and residual demand and still keep this carryover close to 2 billion bushels, which is still a lot of corn out there and a lot of corn to work through. Biggest thing I'm concerned about right now is just the logistics of, you know, we just pulled out a lot of old crop corn. We got a lot of new crop corn coming. Actually, harvest has begun. We're 4% harvested nationally on this week's crop progress numbers. So that's going to be something that's going to weigh on this market, because a lot of producers, unfortunately, are undersold here. But, you know, obviously the opportunities weren't there. So there's going to be some bushels moving around that are going to weigh on things. Soybean wise, we need to see that Chinese demand still step into the market. We've been selling beans at a pretty good clip, but nowhere near where we need to without the Chinese stepping in, whether it's trade deal, whether it's just value, things of that nature. We're still waiting to see the business come together and get some of those beans at least moved to China. That'll be a big piece of the puzzle.
And about the last minute and a half here, last year we did see some farmers store more of the grain, drying it, hoping prices would rise. Would that be a beneficial thing for them to do this year, or what are you seeing in that realm?
You know, the biggest thing is I think guys are going to need some cash flow, and that's going to be a problem. Obviously, just from talking to people, money's getting tight, and that's understandable with the cost of production and getting ready for next year's inputs already too. You know, so there's a couple different routes to do this. If you do go with the storage route, we've had a nice little rally. Make sure we put a little bit of a floor underneath that so you got those prices locked in longer term using put strategies. Otherwise, if you are making sales, I'm a strong recommendation this year, just keeping some paper over top on calls. Keep it simple, keep it cheap, something that's easy to explain to keep yourself at least available to the upside in the market.
Yeah, I mean, is there Anything else that you would like to add here when we're talking about these grain markets? I know you're saying that some harvest has already started. You got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, you know, just biggest thing is look at all your options. Don't be afraid to give people like myself a call and just say, hey, what's available to me in the different tools? That's what we're here for, to educate you. You know, just like I said, find a way to keep yourself balanced and have some opportunities in case things do improve in the prices in the spring.
All right, John Heinberg, a market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, joining us this morning. Thank you for joining me on the Midwest Farm Report. Signing off, I'm Ben Jarbo.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
You want to feel important. You want to be a part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things. You want to feel like you belong. We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it. We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers. We are normal people just like you. And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Part two of my story on the Farm Bureau Washington fly-in. Next on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community, and while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. Yesterday's show featured South Dakota Farm Bureau President Doug Somke, who laid out some of the issues that he and his fellow Farm Bureau members from South Dakota and the rest of the country are discussing this week in Washington, D.C. For example, Somke is not confident that we'll have a new farm bill anytime soon.
Chances are we're not going to get anything. I mean, the best thing we can hope for is what they're trying to call the skinny farm bill, and I really don't like that language. I think that's a horrible thing to call it. I think it's more of a farm bill 2.0. They have to finish this farm bill by the 1st of October. It's not going to happen, folks. I'm just telling you. They got too many things on their plate, and plus we're talking about possibility of a shutdown. So we're really in a world of hurt.
And that, says Somke, is why so many Farm Bureau members are spending their own money and their own time to make their case in D.C.
If we're going to do these things, we've got to be taken seriously, and that's why we're going out there, and that's why we got such a huge delegation going. We've got 38 people from South Dakota going this year. They're going not because they want to get away from their farm. They're going because they're really concerned about the future of their farm for themselves and for their families.
South Dakota Farm Bureau President Doug Somke. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Darrell Anderson.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Tuesday, Dan Schaefer tells us about the latest political headlines from Madison, while Cam Stevenson from Courier Newsroom has the update from D.C.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
The green and gold tailgating, the frozen tundra. Lambert Field has a legacy all its own, including where to build it. Residents on both sides of Green Bay argued for it. Officials wanted property with room for growth. In the end, 50 acres of farmland was purchased, but the address, Ashwaubenon. More bargaining, and in 1956, the land was annexed to Green Bay. Now, do you know the other reason leaders considered this annexation so important? Parking, beer sales, keeping the Packers in Green Bay? The answer coming up. The Green Bay City Stadium Stadium project moved quickly from there and in less than a year opened with a Packers-Bears game. It became Lambeau Field in 1965 following the death of team co-founder and coach Curly Lambeau. So did you guess why the land annexation was so important? It's all three, keeping the team in the city, parking, and beer sales. Ashwaubenon was dry at the time. Officials believe Packers fans wanted to be able to buy beer and could in Green Bay. This history makes it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. The image of what House Democrats say is a crude note President Trump wrote to a child sex offender is now public. CBS's Bradley Blackburn.
The signature Donald appears at the bottom of a message to Jeffrey Epstein, referencing a wonderful secret within a scrawled outline of a naked female form.
The president is once again denying he wrote that note or drew the picture. The Supreme Court's given the Trump administration the go-ahead to step up ICE raids in Los Angeles. Chandra Bhatnagar heads Southern California's ACLU.
We cannot accept a society where people are treated this way because of how they look.
A new study in The Lancet on people with diabetes. Researcher Lauren Stafford at the University of Washington.
The U.S. is doing okay in diagnosing people with diabetes. It's definitely more than the 50% average for the world. Globally, about 90% of those diagnosed with diabetes are on some kind of pharmacological treatment.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.